Sentire Media.
Hello, you. You're listening to A History of Italy, a Sentire Media podcast. Special episode on great women in Italian history, Saint Catherine of Siena. Non posso più accucciarmi e così ritorno su. Lasci i colli nelle valli tra due salici piangenti. Io ritrovo la speranza di un amore che ormai fu. This is a special episode on great women in Italian history to celebrate a History of Italy podcast becoming part of the Sentire Media Network. At Sentire, we've made it our mission to craft podcasts that ignite your passions, keep you informed and entertained, and to deliver insights to those who have a deep love for the Italian way of life. For you, my dear constant listener, this episode is an opportunity to revisit with one of our old friends, St. Catherine of Siena. To you, my new friend and listener, it is an opportunity to discover the interesting story behind one of Italy's two patron saints. I hope you enjoy the episode. The year is 1353. Two young children are weaving their way through the crowded streets of the bustling city of Siena. At a certain point, the sister, a girl of 6 years old, stops, transfixed in the middle of the street, staring up into the sky. Her brother does not realize straight away that she's no longer following him and ends up having to double back and find her. He sees her transfixed, as if lost in a trance. He shakes her to get her to come along, and it makes her burst into tears. For years, she would keep the vision to herself, but she would eventually reveal that she had had a vision of Jesus Christ dressed in red and silver robes, surrounded by saints and popes, who was calling to her. This was her first vision, and it was Jesus calling to her to be his and only his. At the age of 6, the girl decided that she would be the bride of Christ and no one else for the rest of her life. The little girl in question would become one of the most well-known and documented saints in history, and today, along with Saint Francis of Assisi, she is one of the two patron saints of Italy, St. Catherine of Siena. She was not only a religious and spiritual figure, but a very important political figure, intervening on local, national, and international levels. She was born in 1347 to a successful cloth dyer, Giacomo Benincasa, and his wife, Lapa. Catherine was child number 24, born a twin along with her sister Giovanna, who died shortly after. Apart from her vision of Christ, she was already an unusual girl at a very early age, showing little interest in playing or doing activities that were considered suitable for girls at the time, such as embroidering. She would stare for hours on end, seemingly at the wall, while wrapped up in her thoughts and visions. She would follow her mother to church and was particularly interested in the stories of saints and obsessed by those of demons. She was also interested in the stories of religious hermits and thought that could be a good life for her. One day, taking nothing but a piece of bread, she left her home and made her way out of Siena, searching for her biblical desert. Just outside of the city walls, she found a situation she was not used to, without buildings or people, and assumed that that was good enough to be her own desert. She found a suitable cave and settled down to become a hermit. As night closed in, she began to get a bit scared and ended up running all the way back home, where her absence in such a large family had not been noticed. She continued in this way, all the while keeping her secret spiritual life hidden. On the 10th of August 1362, her beloved older sister, Bonaventura, died. And Catherine was racked with pain and suffering, but most of all, guilt. She felt that the death of her sister had been God's punishment for her straying from the path that he had laid out for her, because she had become vaguely interested in the idea of getting married. That was when she made her first pact with God. She would take all of the sins of her family on herself. She would punish herself. She would annul herself in God's name and wage war on her own body. As long as all of her family were guaranteed a place in heaven, especially Bonaventura. She stopped eating everything except for bread, water, and raw vegetables, and would pass her meat along to her brother or under the table to the cats. She started to whip herself and wear uncomfortable chains under her clothes. In her refusal to eat more than water and raw vegetables, her body reached the point that it could no longer actually keep any other more substantial food down. In the end, her mother finally gave in and decided to help her daughter enter the order of the Mantle Sisters. They were having none of it. It was an order made up of widows and older women, and having a young woman moving around entering people's houses in their names could have been a source of scandal. Indeed, scandals and gossip would follow Catherine for the rest of her life. At this point, Catherine felt very ill and came out all over her body and especially on her face with boils and pustules that made her unrecognizable. When her mother requested for the sisters to come and inspect her, they were horrified and declared that she was unattractive enough to take her into the order. Catherine was cured almost immediately afterwards. Word started to get around about this young girl who perhaps had powers of seeing the future and reading minds. She would enter into religious ecstasies in which her body became so rigid that it was, according to some, easier to break than to bend, since her life of fasting had already made her very thin. At times, when taking communion, she would enter into such a state of hysteria that she would scare the other churchgoers and would have to be taken out of the church. In July of 1370, she had perhaps one of her most important and potentially most violent visions in which she was ascending towards Jesus. When she reached the Savior, he ripped her heart out of her chest and placed it upon the church. 3 days later, she had another vision in which he returned to her with another heart and put it inside her, saying it was the heart of the world. At this point, some of the women around her reported seeing a scar on her chest that had not been there before. In any case, from that day on, Catherine's attitude and feeling changed, and she was filled with a great love for the whole world. She doubled her efforts in taking care of the sick, doing the washing for them and for widows, and asking for alms for the needy. Although her body was exhausted by the fatigue of fasting, she found the strength to wander around Siena doing this, and at times seemed to find reserves of superhuman strength that actually scared those around her. Once she met a young man near the steps of a church who was in need of clothes, and so she rushed to her parents' house to steal some and gave them to him. She did not see him after that and was convinced that it had been Jesus. From that day on, she refused to wear comfortable or warm clothes and was content with a light tunic. From that day on, her parents also made sure they locked up the cupboards where they kept their clothes. Catherine continued with her activities, seeing the street and all of the world as her church, and stories of her imposing her hands to heal the sick and relieve pain and even multiplying flour to make bread spread among the populace. She began to gain her first followers and created what she called the family. It is at this point that she started to dictate what would become a flood of letters to religious leaders to get them to reform their corrupt ways and to civil leaders to get them to bring peace to their communities. Her message to them became, "You who are sleeping, awake." She asked all to be charitable and annul themselves in God. Her battle with her body continued with a particularly unpleasant episode. A woman named Andrea was played by an open sore on her chest, which was oozing pus, and was so malodorous that people could not even bear to go near. When Catherine went to assist her, she was so overcome by the stench that she vomited. She was enraged by her body's rebellion against her own iron will, and she wished to assist the woman. Meanwhile, the woman herself started to spread rumours about Catherine. The saint returned, and next time forced herself to place her head near the wound and breathe in the smell. Then, not content with this, when she cleaned out the wound, she then proceeded to drink the mix of water and pus, saying that it was the sweetest drink she had ever tasted. Afterwards, the woman would ask forgiveness for having spread rumours about Catherine. In the late 1360s and early 1370s, her fame grew beyond the town of Siena, beyond wider Tuscany, and beyond the borders of Italy. On the 30th of December, 1370, Pope Gregory XI was elected in Avignon. Just 3 years later, he already saw Catherine of Siena as his go-between with the Tuscan cities. At the same time, the cities themselves, in their political figures of prominence in this period, would ask her to intervene in various questions, both between cities or duchies and within factions themselves. This she dutifully did in the name of peace, which she hoped would come to what she perceived as a particularly violent period in history. Despite his reliance on her, the Pope also felt an obligation to bow to increasing pressure to put Catherine to the test. The head of the spiritual Christian world could not just take a young woman at her word. Catherine was called to trial in Florence and quickly managed also to convince her jurors. Since we are talking about the 14th century and Catherine was a woman, she was assigned a confessor that could keep an eye on her, Raymond of Capua. Ironically, he would become her greatest supporter and, in the end, her biographer, and she would refer to him both as my father and my son. The Pope also let it be known that he intended to come back to Rome. Catherine did not give Gregory a moment's peace on the topic and sent him a barrage of increasingly aggressive letters in which she called into question his sanctity, his manliness, and his courage, basically calling him a giant wimp and wondering if she would perhaps have to report him to Christ himself, with whom she was in direct contact. You may be wondering what the Pope thought of all this verbal abuse in open public letters. Was perhaps one of the most powerful men in Christendom going to sit down and take it from a young woman? Well, in short, yes, he was. By this point, Catherine was recognized all over as someone who spoke directly to God, as God's voice on the earth. And aside from her detractors, this was generally accepted by all. Meanwhile, Catherine continued with her daily activity, and in 1374 and 1375, when a new wave of plague hit, she was on the front lines to help with the sick. She was also asked to travel, for example, when she went to Pisa to help those who could not make their way to Siena. There was no cause she would refuse to take on, including assisting those who had been condemned to death. In one particular case, she accompanied a young man all the way to the chopping block and actually ended up catching his severed head and being covered with his blood. Something perfectly in line with her character, as she had often expressed a desire to drown in the blood of Christ. Catherine had spent all of her life battling, first her family to have her own way, then the society around her, and then the civil leaders to bring peace, the spiritual leaders to eliminate corruption from the church, the popes, the anti-popes, and European leaders. At the same time, for all of her life, the greatest battle had been against her physical being, her body. In 1380, Catherine's iron will finally won that battle. She took to bed in late January of that year. Over the months of her decline, people had started to gather outside of the place where she was staying in Rome, and crowds swelled to a point that the Roman senator took it upon himself to organize the traffic in the area. As winter moved to spring, her agony drew on, and she could no longer even drink. In her very last days, she claimed she had been battling with demons as God, like he had done with Job, had allowed them to attack her, and those around her claimed to have seen the signs of the struggle upon her body, which they described at this point as skin glued on bones and nothing else in between. She finally died on the 26th of April, 1380. Her last words were those of Jesus himself, "Father, into your hands I commend my spirit." She was 33 years old. Her death was kept secret as long as possible, as it was when she was finally taken away, the crowd managed to strip her of her clothes and even steal one of her fingers. The distribution of her body later continued when her long-term confessor and disciple, Raymond of Capua, received permission from the Pope to detach her body from her head and take it to Siena, a gruesome sight you can view to this day. So that was the life of Caterina Benincasa of Siena. But she was only canonized in 1461 by Pope Pius II. Now, as we mentioned, St. Catherine of Siena, along with St. Francis of Assisi, is one of the two patron saints of Italy, as well as one of the patrons of Europe, and of course, of nurses. Thank you very much for listening to this episode. Remember that A History of Italy podcast is a production of Sentire Media, created and hosted by me, Mike Corradi, produced by my wonderful Patreon supporters, without whom all of this would not be possible. Follow A History of Italy wherever you get your podcasts, and go to our website, ahistoryofitaly.com, where you can become a Patreon supporter and get access to extra content, or click through to view my voice map tours of Italian cities. And don't forget, if you love this episode or found it tolerable, please leave a 5-star rating and review. It is much appreciated. Once again, thanks very much for listening, and until next time, arrivederci.
Sentire Media.
Hey, podcast producers and show hosts. Do you want to join a podcast network that celebrates all things Italian? At Sentire Media, we understand the allure of Italy and its unique culture. Our devoted team of hosts and producers are all driven by their shared passion for Italy. And we work tirelessly to create the best lifestyle podcasts and content that will whisk you away to the very heart of Italy. With us, you can savor the mouth-watering flavors, get lost in the stories from the past, break down the cultural barriers, and truly immerse yourself in the vibrant traditions of this intoxicating country. If you have a great podcast idea or are already in production and would like to join Sentire Media, head over to sentiremedia.com, that's sentiremedia.com, and find out how to submit your show.